when we finish, I'm a mess. And the other women in the trailer are too. And they're like, that's real.
Hey folks, it's Kara Mahorn, aka The Blurred Girl, and welcome back to The Blurred Girl Podcast, where I'm always working remotely. My guest this week is actress and producer Simone Missick. Now, most of you geeks out there remember Simone from her role as a live-action comic book character, Misty Knight, from Marvel's Luke Cage on Netflix. She also starred in The Defenders and Jessica Jones as the same character. Her career has really taken off since then, and she's currently starring in All Rise as Judge Lola Carmichael. Yep, she's the lead. So whenever you see those All Rise posters, you are usually looking at Simone Missick's face. She's also currently starring as Trep in Altered Carbon Season 2 as well. But before I get into all of that, I have a bit of sad news to share. I promise I'll tell you everything after we take this break. This episode of the Blurred Girl Podcast is sponsored by Juwaso Graphics. Now, this company is amazing for three reasons. One, it's an incredible anime streetwear brand with really tight gear. Two, all of the artists that contribute artwork get a cut of the sales. And three, the owner of the company, Juwaso Lee, is just 19 years old. Check out JuwasoGraphics.com. That's J-U-A-S-O Graphics.com. And tell them the Blurred Girl sent you. So listen, there's really only one way to stay completely safe from the coronavirus, and that is to stay inside your house, wash your hands a lot, and listen to every single one of the Blurred Girl podcasts. That's the antidote. I have it. You can hear these directly on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and so many other podcatchers out there. So please, 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 please consider subscribing and leaving me a rating and a comment over on iTunes. It really helps the show out. And if you're feeling extra helpful, I'd really love it if you could screenshot this episode, tag the Blurred Girl over on IG Stories in a post, and tell me what you think. That doesn't help my numbers, but I promise you it makes me feel better about myself. So you can help my self-esteem today. Yay. Okay, so which do you want to hear first? The good news or the bad news? Bad news? Okay, so the bad news is, remember how for the last few weeks I was telling you about all the cool stuff that we were going to do at Ace Comic Con? Yeah, well, that's no longer going to happen. Unfortunately, Ace Comic Con Northeast has been canceled. And as far as I know, they're not rescheduling it. I'm not sure. I do know that Ace Midwest is still happening in the fall, so you should definitely check that out. And if you've already bought tickets to Ace Northeast, which was going to be in Boston March 20th through the 22nd, they are refunding everybody's money. But definitely go to acecomiccon.com to get the scoop, and definitely follow them on social media for up-to-the-minute updates. Ace is not alone, though. This week, basically everything has been canceled. Emerald City Comic Con, E3, Coachella. I mean, by the time you hear this podcast, I'm sure there's going to be even more stuff that has been canceled across the country and across the world. There's, we already know about South by Southwest, but a lot of things are being pushed. There's movies that are being pushed, movie premieres that are being pushed. I know I was actually scheduled to interview at several junkets over the next few weeks, and they've all been pushed. So yeah, coronavirus is a thing, and I want everybody out there, in all seriousness, to stay safe. I've heard some very disturbing things out there outside of how people are being treated. I just mean some really horrible misinformation, and it makes me so angry because the government could have handled this so much earlier than they did, but they didn't. And so that's how a lot of this misinformation gets out there. I'm only going to address two things. There've been several people who've been talking about, like, well, Lysol can't say they stopped the coronavirus. How come we can't just Lysol everything and kill it? Because coronavirus is not new. It is a strain of the flu. It is not new. What is new is the strain. That's why it's called COVID-19, coronavirus 19. 19 stands for 2019. If you're asking why are we just hearing about all of this in 2020, I'm going to tell you to go look at who's in the White House. That's not this podcast, but it basically was discovered last year, and it's not something that can just sort of be sprayed out of the atmosphere. And something else that I've heard that I've got to dispel this myth immediately is that Black people can't catch it, which is dumb. because it's a virus, anybody can catch it. The issue is that it did not start in Africa. And so people are confused by that because people seem to think that Black folks start all the diseases on the planet. So yeah, I just wanted to dispel those two myths, and I hope everybody is staying safe and everybody is staying focused, and check on your loved ones, check on your, you know, older folks, check on the people that you keep seeing posting on Twitter or kind of panicking, check on them outside of Twitter or DM them or call them. Make sure your friends are handling everything, you know, okay, because this is a crisis that can, you know, make people really freak out, and you don't want anybody doing anything crazy. So again, it's a scary time. I'm not saying that it's not. I'm just saying let's use our heads and be logical, okay? And be thoughtful and be mindful and pay attention. You don't necessarily have to be online all day, every day to hear what's going on with the virus, because usually the actual factual information seems to be coming out once a day and then everybody's spinning it for the rest of the day. So, you know, take some time off of social media. Spend some time listening to your favorite podcast like this one. Like how I did that? Don't forget to subscribe. Tell your friends. Okay. Now, my guest today. My guest today is actress, producer, and I love saying this, my Bed-Stuy Brooklyn neighbor, Simone Missick. Now, before y'all start looking at my address, I can assure you that my lady is very busy and is currently in California shooting her CBS show, All Rise. Which, by the way, until I did this interview, I did not realize that All Rise was CBS Network's first show led by a Black woman in its 90-year history. It's 2020 and we're still saying first Black woman, damn. And yes, before y'all at me, Sonequa Martin-Green is the first Black woman to head a show on CBS All Access, but that is not a network show. It is actually on All Access. So Simone actually still holds the title for the first Black woman to head a show over on CBS. We shouldn't be still saying this. Anyway, I first met Simone when I got a chance to interview her for Luke Cage season 2 over at Sci-Fi Wire. In fact, that's also where I met her makeup artist, Keys, who also lives nearby and who is actually responsible for keeping my face beat for the majority of 2019. So shout out to Keys. She does makeup for a lot of Black women behind the scenes that y'all have seen out there in the world. And at some of your favorite events, and she is incredible at what she does. And thank you so much for introducing her to me, Simone. Since meeting Simone, we've actually kept in touch, and in fact, she has been on this very podcast before with her husband, actor, writer, director, and producer, Dorian Missick. I will put a link in the show notes to that episode so you can check that out as well. So if this episode sounds like two friends chatting, it's because I have spoken with her before, and I'm so proud of all the roles she's been getting, including her new role as Trep on season 2 of Altered Carbon. There was a scene in the show this season that had her, Anthony Mackie, Renee Elise Goldsberry, and Carl Lumley, and it was like a blurred Hamilton dream come true. We talk about that experience, how playing Misty blew up her career, and whether or not she'd like to do a Daughters of the Dragon show in the future. But I'm super excited to talk to her, to get her take on things, and also talk about how her life has changed since getting this huge, huge role, All Rise. So many of the Marvel Netflix characters are now over on CBS. Mike Coulter, who played Luke Cage, he's on Evil. And in fact, Simone's co-star, Wilson Bethel, played Bullseye for that one season, that last season of Daredevil. So yeah, it's been fun watching all of these actors land other places. So I am super excited for you to hear this conversation and this interview. So up next, my interview with Simone Missick. So Simone, the last time you were on this podcast, it was actually me talking to you and your husband, Dorian. And that might have been the last time that you could kind of walk out in public on your own and not be mobbed, right?
No, not at all. Not at all. I still go to the grocery store.
Now, do people ever think you're other actors? Do they think like, oh, you look a lot like, and like name somebody else?
No, people always stop me and they think I'm their cousin or somebody's sister, or don't you go to such and such church? And I'm like, no. That's not me. So that's always fun because you know that they know you from somewhere, but they don't know where. and I'm not offering that information up. They can't place it. Because the other part is, the worst is when you go, well, do you watch? And they're like, nah, I don't watch that. So I'd rather just let it be a mystery.
So one thing that I forgot to talk to you about the last time I saw you, I forgot to ask you where you're from and where your people from.
I'm from Detroit, born and raised. And my mother also born and raised in Detroit. My dad was born and raised in D.C., and I ended up going to his and my aunt's and my grandmother's alma mater of Howard University. So I grew up going back and forth to D.C., and then that's where, you know, I really became a young woman. But, yeah, born and raised in Detroit on the east side, and that was probably the best thing that I think could have happened to me as a young Black girl growing up in America, to be, you know, nurtured and cultivated in that city in particular.
That's amazing. Now, did you get into acting when you were younger? Like, were you in theater group and everything when you were in high school? Or did that happen when you were in college?
So I knew that I wanted to be an actor, but I did not do anything acting related outside of trying to turn every school project into a sketch and a skit until I was junior in high school. I played around with a theater company that was a children's theater company, and I did one show, and in it I played a dog.
Oh no.
And the other kids were a cat and a bear. And we were all animals.
You were all animals. So, okay.
You know, it wasn't we were all animals because it was children's theater.
Okay.
But other than that, I didn't do anything until I got to college. And I was in my second semester of my freshman year, and I decided to take an acting for non-majors class, and that was it. That was the beginning of my journey into becoming a professional actor.
You're a Howard alum, correct? I'm pretty sure that
yes
because you are on For All Nerds. They make sure everybody everywhere knows. I will say that about Howard alums. Y'all make sure everybody everywhere knows that you went to Howard.
Exactly.
Now, what do you consider your first big break, and what do you consider your first paid role? And I'm saying that in two different questions because I realize that they're not always the same thing.
Right. So my first paid role was a Little Caesars commercial in Detroit. It was my first commercial, and they ran that thing into the ground. They played it outside.
Pizza.
Yes, and it was a pizza commercial. They played it on the Jumbotron outside of the baseball stadium, the Tiger Stadium in downtown Detroit. They would have it running everywhere. It was on TV, out on billboards. It was huge. That was probably my first billboard. But I got paid $500 for that damn commercial. They did not. It was non-union. There were no residuals. Nobody.
Oh.
Yeah. Had it been, I probably would have been financially set for a couple of years as much as they ran that commercial. But unfortunately, it
I'm
wasn't.
Thinking.
But that was my first paid gig as an actor, and then my first break. I would have to say it was Luke Cage. And I hesitate only because I wonder if there was a job before that made me feel like, okay, I'm moving in the right direction. And I definitely had a lot of those moments as an actor. I got cast in a role in a play in Los Angeles that really helped to solidify what kept me going creatively for years before I booked Luke Cage. It was, you know, that play, and then it took me on to a host of other plays that kept me working for years. and that kept me grounded in work that was important, that wasn't just a commercial or a he went that way role. And there were Right. Are you okay? But there were certainly, you know, those moments as well where I was like, yes, I finally booked a job. But the most life-changing was definitely Luke Cage. It was my first time being a series regular on a show. And that show, it changed my life, all for the better. And so, yeah, that was my big break.
Yes. And in fact, that was the first time I got a chance to interview you for sci-fi.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm in the presence of a movie star. I had no idea that was your first big break because you carried yourself like, yes, I belong here. These are all my people. This is what's supposed to happen.
I definitely felt that way. You know, having thought that it was going to happen, I thought I was going to become famous at 28. And I've been dreaming about this since I was 8. So for it to happen, you know, when I was in my early 30s, or I think I was, 32 when I booked Luke Cage, for that to have happened in the way that it did, I had definitely been waiting and envisioning and vision boarding and praying and, you know, walking circles around places in order to bring down the walls of Jericho and to make something happen. and so when it finally happened, I was all the way ready for it. I was like, I'm not messing this up.
And well, you were fantastic because now, you know, I was a fan, as you know, of the comic book character Misty Knight for years. And a lot of people just didn't know who she was because she has not been a constant in comics. And like, not only are you now in Marvel's database as Misty Knight, you are, to many kids out there, a superhero. How does that feel?
I don't have words for how wonderful and amazing that is. You know, I remember my first vision of a Black female superhero in Halle Berry and Storm. And she held that for over a decade, you know, and she was the first embodiment of that character. And so to have, you know, my name be associated with the first of anything, but for it to be a genre where, like you said, a lot of people didn't know Misty Knight because she wasn't explored, and she didn't transcend that boundary that I think, you know, she was held in for so long. To be able to be the person to see that come to light is just such a blessing. And like you said, no matter where that character goes in the future, you know, I feel like Nichelle Nichols, like I'm the first. I was the one.
You are. You absolutely
are. The spaceship. And I certainly look at her, you know, and go, wow, you know, this woman is still so beloved, so revered. And, you know, Zoe Saldana has taken on that role and done such a great job with it, but people still love Nichelle. And so to think about that, to think about, you know, being in my 70s, 80s, 90s, I'm trying to live to 106, but to think about that, and to still have people love Misty Knight, it's such a blessing.
Your character, I think one of the things that people connected with is the fact that Misty wasn't born with powers. She was given tech, to, you know, when she lost her arm, but she was always mentally, like, ahead of, you know, just literally was the smartest person in the room, wherever she was, even in the comics. And so you brought such a realism to that's why, you know, Disney Plus, if you're listening, we're still waiting for our Daughters of the Dragon show. I know Simone's busy right now, but maybe in between seasons we can maybe get Misty on TV again, you know.
We didn't see enough. And that team up, man, I love Jessica Hennick. I love who she is as an actor, and she was so much fun to play opposite. She and I really became friends in real life. Jessica's off, you know, shooting the Matrix movie, so she, you know, she might be a little busy too, but that would be, you know, that would be such a gift to be able to come back and revisit those characters if it ever happened. Because that, you know, you're right. Missy was often the smartest person in the room, and very grounded in this, you know, kind of reality. And I think the same thing was true with Colleen Wing. You know, so these are these two very smart, level-headed women who were very capable and knew how to kick ass and take names. And I don't think we saw enough of it.
And also we didn't see enough. I mean, the cast was amazing. I still talk about that scene where it was you and Karen Pittman. And I actually think every Black female actress lead on the show was in that scene. And I was like pausing the TV. I'm like, somebody, I got to get a screenshot because this doesn't happen. Shout out to Cheo on that, because those were amazing, amazing moments.
Yeah.
We also got amazing moments like that on Altered Carbon. And we got to take a few minutes to talk about Trap. Because I know you're on All Rise now, but I believe you shot Altered Carbon first.
Yeah, I was shooting Altered Carbon while I shot the first episode of All Rise. Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, it was, I remember when I saw that you were going to be in it, I was like, oh, okay. But knowing about the lore of Altered Carbon and Sleeves and Stacks and how people have, you know, have multiple lives, basically, because your human body is now just a vessel for your spirit, which lives in a drive in the back of your spine. We weren't sure what we were going to see. But when you showed up, I was like, and showed up in the first scene with Jihae, who's another, I'm a huge fan of hers as well. I was very excited. Did you know about the show before you got involved with it?
I did. I knew about it. I had seen a couple episodes with my husband, and it was dense. Like, it was a lot for me to take in. And I think I was filming at the time, so I was tired all the time, and I would come home, and he'd watch the show. And I'm like, I'm going to watch it with you. And I would inevitably just like fall asleep, not because the show wasn't compelling, but because I was exhausted. So when the role came around and I ended up being asked to be a part of the show, I definitely watched it twice. And there were still things that when I showed up on set, I was like, now, how does this work again for this technology? A sleeve is a stack is a, like, I, you know, I was still a little confused. So major kudos to the fans of Altered Carbon who understand this world and, you know, love the show and made it as popular as it was both the first and the second season. Apparently someone told me today that we're on the top 10 list of shows on Netflix right now. And I'm like, that's pretty damn great, because Netflix, it seems, is dropping dropping a new show every time somebody sneezes.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that we've made a list.
Yeah, since we've been talking, they've dropped 104.
Exactly. Yeah. And now 105. There you go.
Exactly. What I really liked about Trep is that you were sort of the audience for a lot of the new people.
Right.
What was your most favorite thing about Trep and playing her?
Oh, that she got to kill people. You know, and it might sound real trite, but Misty Knight wasn't killing people. She was shooting at people. She might wound them, but, you know, her brand of superhero was not allowed to real death someone, as we say on Altered Carbon. And so, you know, when you're introduced to her and she's so just smart and witty and dry and just strong and powerful. Like, she, to me, is the essential, quintessential badass. And, you know, you see her and this character, this Takeshi Kovacs, this envoy, the last envoy, you know, he's able to read a situation and change the construct and do all this amazing stuff by, you know, mastering his mind and understanding other people's behavior, and that he underestimates her and she bests him. And that is such a great introduction for a character. And at the same time, she's, you know, ruthless. I just loved her and loved playing her and relished being somebody who was a little bit more black on the shades of gray. Like she definitely was, she was a departure from this kind of altruistic ideal of a character. And she was, you know, she wasn't interested in the Kel Chris Falconer movement. She wasn't interested in participating in the revolution. She saw it for what it was, which was, you know, something to keep poor people poor and and confused. And, you know, Trep was about making sure that she got her money and her family was taken care of. So that was great.
Yeah. And talking about her family, you were playing a queer character. You had a wife and child, quote unquote, at home. And I'm saying quote unquote with the child because it seems like your child, one of the main reasons why your character took on bounty hunting was because you wanted to pay for your child's sleeve. So basically, children, just like any other universe, children grow, but your particular child, every time they grow, you got to buy a new body for them. Because that they're how they were born, they died. They stepped on a They stepped on a mine, or were they shot? What was it?
Yeah, he stepped on a mine. He was playing out in a field, and there was, you know, we're on a war torn planet, Harlan's World, where war has been going on for decades and almost century. Well, maybe even a century. And my kid stepped on a mine. So you're right. Every few years, you're going to have to get him a new sleeve. And that, you know, it's not the reason why she became a bounty hunter. She was a bounty hunter before she had TJ. That's how she met her wife. She was the one bounty that she did not turn in. But that, you know, that profession, that choice to, you know, support your family in that way. That was a great character choice. I mean, you know, this came from the books. Trep was always a bounty hunter, but she wasn't written as queer. She wasn't written as married with a kid. And so I thought that was a huge credit to our showrunner, Allison Schapker, and the other writers over at Altered Carbon, to make her very multi-dimensional in a way, and not just this one thing. You know, Trep was so many things, and that's what made her fun to explore. I mean, she would have been great even if she was just a badass bounty hunter killing people, but she was also a person who was, like you said, fighting to pay off her son's sleeve, to keep her and her wife and their family safe, to find her brother, which is a beautiful part of the storyline that makes her, that is her journey, that is separate from Kel's journey, that is separate from Kovach's story, which is great to have because, you know, I think so often we see women within the sci-fi genre, or, you know, even other characters within the sci-fi genre, always going for the same goal. You know, we're all trying to save the planet, or we're all trying to, you know, stop the bad guy. And Trep is definitely, I am all about saving my family.
Yeah, yeah. And or we're there to, you know, save the man, even though we're fully capable of saving ourselves. Oh. And what I even like is they fixed that even between season one and season two. Because I'll personally say that was one of my issues with season one. I'm like, if there is one more woman that gets beaten or is a damsel in distress because her man, I'm losing it. But I feel like they fixed that this season with several characters. Even Quellcrest was like, I know you love me, but this is getting kind of crazy. And one of the scenes that I thought was fantastic was with when you and Quell and Takeshi meet your dad, played by Carl Lumley, who I was so excited to see. What was that scene like?
Oh, Carl. I love Carl. I love him. He is just a consummate professional and the sweetest man. Just so lovely. But that, I thought, was so well handled. You know, I had created this history for Trep, and so to have him be the embodiment of her family, you know, mm-hmm. her dad, and for him to be as absent in her life as he was, and that be something that influenced who she is today, like to see that on screen, you don't see characters, families, parents in a world where life is so precious. You don't really get to see multi-generations. And so for my family to, for you to be able to see the dad, the brother, the wife, the son, you mm-hmm. know, I definitely felt like I was given so much. And then for them to be all beautifully played, you know, Sharon Taylor is my wife, an excellent actress, and Carl Lumley to have him as my father, I was just like, how many prayers are you going to answer, Lord?
Well, you also were sharing the screen with Anthony Mackie as well, with Falcon and Renee Elise Goldsberry, who is Quillcrest Falconer. What was, we saw some of the stuff on social that you shot about behind the scenes. What was it like every day on set with Mr. Mackie cutting the check?
Oh, good old Anthony. Good old cut the check, Anthony. I want to know how everybody knows about him saying this. Like, that is amazing.
Because whenever he goes on tour to promote any of his Marvel movies, that's all he says. He's always, and it's in all the behind the scenes footage of him flying around, and every time his feet hit the ground after being Falcon, he'd yell, cut the check. That's his thing. He even has Chris Evans in them saying it.
I wish I had known this before. No, Anthony is great. I've known him for years. He and my husband are really good friends. They were baby actors in New York together. They did a soldier's play, which is currently in a revival right now on Broadway, but they were a part of the first revival. Or no, the second revival, I think. On Broadway, mm-hmm. off Broadway. And so they've known each other for years. And when I got Misty Knight, he was definitely one of the people to congratulate me. And so this is our first time working together. It felt like working with family. He is an excellent leader. You know, he works extremely hard. It was a lot on his plate to have to, you know, be this character, to embody this new role, this new sleeve, and it had already been played, you know, so wonderfully by Joel Kinnaman, right? And you know, and Will,
yeah, no, Will is amazing. I've had a crush on him.
Man, shit, don't we all?
Like since Elektra, I have never wished for a baddie to win so badly in a movie until he was the leader of the hands in Elektra. I was like, okay, I'm done. Whatever he's in. Is he also, I'm assuming he's also a joy to work with.
Oh my God. They all were. And he definitely is. He is such a beautiful person, a family man. He's so loving and helpful and sweet and kind and can kick ass like no other. Mm-hmm. Like I was just watching on his Instagram page the behind the scenes of his fight, and this man is just so ridiculously talented. And you know, his dad was an outstanding Taekwondo instructor, I believe Taekwondo instructor. But you know, he Anthony, Renee, you know, these are all people who are just one of a kind. Renee Elise Goldsberry, I mean, in addition to being gorgeous mm-hmm. and wildly talented, a Tony Award winning actress, you know, she's worked with Oprah, for God's sakes. Like, she is just a high class, high caliber actor. And she's so grounded and so down to earth. It felt like I found a sister in her. She also grew up in Michigan, and I'm from Detroit, and you know, so we found a kinship in that. But all of them, like, they just made every day worth it, because it was hard. It was hard filming that show in Vancouver in the winter. We're all away from our families. you know, Anthony's family is in New Orleans. Will's family was in L.A. My husband was between New York and L.A. And Renee's family is in New York. And, you know, we're all away from our village, our community. Torben, who played Carrera, his, you know, his base is Germany. And so all of us are just so far away from home. And any one of those people could have taken it out on everyone around them. And I think that, you know, having Anthony be the lead of the show and just really care about people. Like every time he found out that somebody had a baby, he was making a, getting a baby blanket made for the kid. And I'm like, who does that? Anthony does.
Anthony does. You know what I mean? Like, make a baby blanket and just cut the check.
And cut the check.
Now I can't let you go before talking about All Rise, because like I was saying, your face is everywhere now for this CBS show where you play Judge Lola. But I have to say, the most recent episode, I'm not quite sure when this episode is airing, but at the time of this recording, episode 16 just went up, and that courtroom for that little hostage situation could have used a little Trip. Might have even been able to use a little Misty.
Who are you telling?
Because, but, and this just shows how versatile you are as an actress.
Well, thank you.
It tickles me that you and Mike Coulter, who played Luke Cage, also both ended up on CBS shows. And your bestie was actually also on a Netflix Marvel show as well on the show. So, tell us about Lola a little bit. And this show is does not have you running up and down, jumping up on walls, although I know you have stunt people for that, but it's not as physical as your other two roles I just mentioned. It is really a character study. What is that like, being able to really dig in and develop this character?
Oh, God, it's 22 episodes. You know, we don't see television like that a lot anymore. A lot of things are, you know, 13 episodes, 8 episodes, 10 episodes. And so to be able to explore a character over 22, to really get in depth in who she is and what makes her tick, to see her family, to see her parents played just so brilliantly by L. Scott Caldwell and Brent Jennings, you know, two just OGs in the game, I would say. Like to see her life, to have her have a husband, and, you know, what does that look like? I think that I'm so thankful for this opportunity and to do it on network television and to do it on CBS. I keep having people say this, and I feel like it can't be true that CBS has never had a show with a black female lead. I'm like, how is this possible? But if I am also a first on this, you know, just the sheer amount of gratitude that I have to tell this kind of story about something that is so important, which is the criminal justice system. You know, being a black woman from Detroit and from a working class neighborhood, I see the difference between where my life went and where other people that I know, where their lives turned out. And, you know, to be able to tell the other side of that, to tell the story about the men and women who work in a courthouse and also the defendants who are, you know, coming into that courtroom every day. It's great. It makes for wonderful television. But I love that the show is not just one thing. You know, it's not a procedural. We're not looking at the case of the week, and it's not, you know, Law and Order ripped straight from the headlines. Obviously, we do deal with very pressing current issues like immigration, criminal justice reform, overcharging and oversentencing, police corruption, police brutality. You know, we deal with a lot of current issues, but we also look at those stories that don't make the front page, that are those little bylines in the newspaper that really changed the course of people's lives. And so what I love is to be able to bring that to audiences and to bring it in the face of my character on a network like CBS that is changing, and to feel like I am a part of that change. You know, our lineup on Monday nights has
the neighborhood with Cedric the Entertainer and Tichina Arnold, two of my favorite comedic actors. And then we have the new show, Bob Hart's Abishola, which is about an immigrant woman in Detroit, of all places, that's fallen in love. And, you know, that's something different on CBS. And then to have us come in right after that, it's just great to be a part of it. I'm also on the network, like you said, with Mike Coulter and his show Evil, and to have his face on there. And then I've got a really good friend named Myelin Robinson, who is on the show The Unicorn. And she and I did that very life-changing play that I did in L.A. together. And that was her first big role in L.A. was in that play. And it was the first one for me as well. And, you know, to see her, I think a decade later, also to be on a show and be a series regular on a CBS show, it's not lost on me how important this time is, how almost it feels like a renaissance of sorts that I am a part of. I remember growing up and seeing Nia Long and Sanaa Lathan and Gabrielle Union, you know, all of those women just killing it in the film industry. And so to see it happening again on the big screen and on the small screen and to be a part of it, I'm just extremely thankful.
And I also love the fact that Lola isn't perfect. She makes mistakes. She's, you know, emotionally in or at work, and she struggles with the two of those things. Like, your character has agency. And I also love, like I said, Wilson Bethel also as being your counterpart, but a platonic counterpart in this. I love the fact that they're just friends. I love the fact that they don't always agree. And I think that's what is making the show resonate with, you know, so many people. Do you have input into some of those lines? Do sometimes you guys ad lib and go off script a little bit?
We do. It's funny because the show is so fast paced, because people speak so quickly, we don't encourage ad-libbing and going off script. But whenever he and I are together, we know each other and each other's work as actors so much that we always do so. And we always find something to just really ground this friendship that we love playing. You know, I think that what's so great about Mark and Lola is that they are two completely different people. And she comes from a two-parent household. He's got a dad who is a grifter who gets accused of murder. You know, they have different perspectives, and yet they have found a common ground and a friendship that enviable, you know. And there is this great episode where Mark is arguing to have a doctor brought up on murder charges for being complicit in the death of a Black woman, a Black pregnant mother. Mm-hmm. And we know that the maternal death rates in this country are extremely high, and it is absolutely deplorable the number of Black women who are dying just trying to have children. And the idea that Mark is the one who's prosecuting that case, that he's the one who's saying, no, this is murder, this isn't malpractice, I think that that has something to do a little bit with the fact that his best friend is a Black woman. And for him to take that road, you know, the two of them, they do challenge one another. They do hold the mirror up to each other because they have known each other for so long. They know what makes the other person tick, what their blind sides are, what their weaknesses are, and what their strengths are. And I think it's great to see them constantly motivating each other and encouraging each other within a system that can be disheartening, where you can get jaded. And they do it with such, you know, they have such fun with it.
Now, last couple questions, but I got to do one about All Rise, one more about All Rise, because episode 14, man, that episode with your mom. Ooh. There's two things that were fabulous about that show. That interaction with you and your mom, L. Scott Caldwell, who you just were talking about, and that yellow trench coat, which... at some point, you are going to tell me where to get that coat, because that coat is giving me life. I have dreamt about this coat. But but that scene with your mom, actually, that whole episode was so layered and so necessary. What did you think when you got that script? And was that another script that you contributed to or ad-libbed on?
So when I got the script, I was so happy to see, we call her Scotty, that's her name, to see Scotty come back. And then to also introduce Lola's dad and to be able to see that relationship and how different they are. You know, so often, mm-hmm. I'm a mama's girl. You know, my dad and I are the ones who are like fire and ice, and it's because we're so similar. And I think that what's been interesting for me is to watch that play out between a mother and daughter in the way that it does, and for it not just to be personality, but for it to be fundamental morals and ideals about, you know, the criminal justice system, and to watch them have this argument that you can tell they've been having for, you know, years, to be able to see that play out on screen. But what was so wonderful about working with Scotty, we were sitting in the hair and makeup trailer, and this was before we shot that scene, and she's like, so what do you think about this? And so mm-hmm. she starts, you know, just parsing out my thoughts about different lines and different thoughts and where we're coming from. And before I know it, we are doing a 10-minute improv in the trailer, and it feels like mother and daughter. And it is so real and so layered and so grounded. And this was in the hair and makeup trailer, and everyone in the trailer just stopped. And we're having this very private conversation, which is in essence an improv of the scene that we're about to shoot around these people. And when we finish, mm-hmm. I'm a mess. And the other women in the trailer are too. And they're like, that's real. That's me and my mom. Or that's a relationship I recognize. And when we got on set, because we don't improv very often, you know, we did the scene a couple times, and we were working with Michael Robin, who is one of our executive producers. He was directing this episode. He also did the pilot. And so I love working with him. I feel very safe working with him. And, you know, he got to the scene and he was like, you know, how do you feel? Are you good? And I said, no, because I knew what we had experienced in that trailer. And it wasn't being supported by the parameters of the scene. You know, the language that we had found was a little bit different. And so I said, can we just roll into an improv? And he was like, yeah. And so Scotty and I just improv the scene and then rolled into the dialogue and found different things within it. And he said, That's the take I'm printing. That's the take I'm going to use.
And it was powerful. It was a punch in the gut. I remember when they put the show put it up on social. I was like, what? And also, I think there's a whole bunch of people that were like, oh, I'm watching this show now.
Yeah.
So I think you got some new fans out of it on top of everything else. That and that coat, but we're going to come back to that. So I do want to ask what you have coming up next that you can talk about, if you can talk about it.
Oh, I do not know. I have a phone meeting once we get off this phone to see if somebody wants to give me a job somewhere. The show is done filming at the end of this month, and I am just with open arms excited about what could be coming. I'm currently, you know, attached to two projects that are trying to get off the ground and trying to get funding. But, you know, I just wake up every day and recognize that wherever I'm supposed to be, God is already putting me on that path. And so the only thing I know is coming is at least a week's worth of rest as soon as this show is done.
Yes.
So that's all I currently have on the horizon, and what else happens later, you'll know it from me on you'll be the first to know.
Awesome. And my final question, and this is a question I ask all of my guests now, is if you could go back and talk to that Howard student that was, you know, in acting classes and trying to figure out what she was going to do with her life, and give her a piece of advice, What piece of advice would you give that Simone?
Get out of your own way. I would tell her to get out of her own way. You know, I spent a lot of time, I would say, doing self-sabotaging. You know what I mean? Like not taking care of myself physically, and whether that was not eating right, not exercising, not taking my vitamins, not drinking my water, you know, all of those things. But then I also spent a lot of time wondering if this was what I was supposed to do. And even though I knew that it was something that I wanted with all of my heart and, you know, prayed for and thought that it was what I was supposed to be doing, I spent a lot of time questioning that, a lot of wasted time questioning that. And so I would tell that young, you know, 18-year-old girl, just get out of your own way. You know that this is what you're supposed to be doing. And now that you know that, go about the business of doing everything that you can to prepare for it. You know, I wish I had taken fight training and combat and dance and, you know, learned another language fluently in order to prepare me for some of the opportunities and the roles that I've been given. And, you know, every time I have a character where I get to do stunts, I'm excited. But I also, you know, there's a part of me that's like, damn it, I wish I had been training like William Lee my whole life for these things. You know what I mean? I wish I was, you know, I could do one-handed cartwheels and catch a knife at the same time and do roundhouse kicks and grab a gun. You know what I mean? I think that everything that comes to me, I'm definitely game for. But had I, you know, just got out of my own way a long time ago, I probably would have enjoyed the journey a little bit more. And it's not to say that I don't enjoy the journey, but it was tough. It was tough being in LA for 10 years before Misty Knight. It was a lot of wondering if it was ever going to happen. And I'm thankful for how it happened and the way it happened. And I'm so glad it didn't happen when I was 28 or 23. You know, because I probably wouldn't have appreciated it as much. But, you know, that's what I would have said. Just, girl, get out your own way. Sit down and get ready because it's coming.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to, you know, I'm a fan too, but it's so important to let everybody else know about the work that you're doing. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I'm going to let you go so you can get that new money.
Always great talking to you, and you know, I love that we share the same makeup artist now, because we can love on each other on social media.
Yes. Thanks to you. Thanks to you.
Yes.
She's leveled up my game so much. I have to thank. Shout out to Keys. Yes. Who caught me in the chair at another point, was like, listen, let me help you. Simone Missick is really an incredible actress, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing even more amazing work for her. So please, please, if you can, check out All Rise, which is on CBS Monday nights at 9 Eastern, as well as Altered Carbon, which is up on Netflix right now. If you are at home like so many other people and looking for a series to watch, I would check out Altered Carbon. Both seasons 1 and season 2 are up, and you can check her out on season 2. That's it for me, basically. If you've hung out this long, please consider subscribing and leave a comment for me over on iTunes, and let me know on social media how you liked this podcast. Don't forget to tag me at The Blurred Girl. Also, shout out to my podcast sponsor, Juwaso Graphics. Please check out juwasographics.com. And while you're there, I'm actually looking at that yellow and black melanin number, that sweatshirt. Anybody out there want to send me a shelter in place gift, I'll take it. And if you're interested in advertising on the Blurred Girl podcast, please email me at karama@theblurredgirl.com. That's Karama, K-A-R-A-M-A, at theblurredgirl, T-H-E-B-L-E-R-D-G-U-R-L.com, with the subject line podcast ad. Please stay safe, wash your hands, and share this podcast with your friends and family. It just might brighten their day since we're all going to be indoors for a while. See you on the internet.